This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
The next vaccine hurdle. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. As COVID vaccines for kids move closer to approval, how will parents be convinced that jabbing children is the best option? Also, on the travel front, flyers welcome what's being called the revolution in overhead bin space. We'll have details. Plus, how the horror movie streaming service called Shudder is using a human touch to connect with subscribers. And if inflation continues to rise, your investments may take a hit.
You have to decide, first of all, whether you see this as a significant threat. And it's still, I think, a divided house on that. But if you are a little worried about inflation, you can start looking at various investments to either provide some sort of protection or ride it out.
Russ Wiles at the Arizona Republic looks at strategies to protect your retirement savings. Well, COVID vaccines for children ages 5 to 11 are inching closer to authorization in the U.S. with possible availability as soon as November. And experts are already looking to the next hurdle, and that's actually getting the shots in those young arms. What will that entail? We're joined now by Melody Schreiber, contributor to Guardian US. Melody, what are you hearing?
We're expecting if vaccines for children are authorized, it'll probably be early November as they start to roll out. But recent surveys have shown that only about a third of parents will be ready to go and waiting to get those shots. Another third are in the wait and see group. And then the final third are either opposed or will only get them if they're required. So there's still a lot of work to talking to parents about how these vaccines are safe and effective for children if they're authorized.
All right. So to your point, somebody had said this is really about the science of communication. And among the things that need to be done is engaging pediatricians. What does that mean? What would that involve?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've sort of absorbed is that kids aren't very affected by COVID. This was a message particularly in the previous administration. Kids are definitely affected by COVID. They are disproportionately reporting new cases right now. They tend not to have severe outcomes or death, but kids do die from COVID, and they also have long-term side effects. And then kids can also bring the virus home and spread it to vulnerable family members. So it's absolutely crucial that they be vaccinated for their own sake and for others. And bringing in pediatricians is a really natural step. Most people trust their doctors for medical decisions like this. You might not trust a politician standing at a podium, but if you have your doctor that you trust, you can go and have your questions answered. So it's really important for pediatricians to understand the data, if the vaccines are authorized, what the safety and efficacy profiles look like. Pediatricians are also really good at talking about vaccines. When you have a lot of these anti-vax myths, pediatricians know the answers to a lot of the questions people have because they've been dealing with this for years now.
We're speaking with Melody Schreiber, contributor to Guardian US, also editor of What We Didn't Expect, Personal Stories About Premature Birth. This story is called COVID Vaccines for U.S. Children are coming, but challenge will be persuading parents. It was suggested, too, in your story, maybe build on existing childhood vaccine mandates. How so?
Yeah, so right now in most states, we require vaccines for kids to attend school. When mandates are implemented, we see rates go down, rates of disease go down, vaccination rates go up. So it makes sense. But one of the experts who spoke with me, Dr. Saad Omer at Yale, pointed out that we need to make sure that people have access to the vaccines, that it's easy for families to get vaccinated before we have mandates. So maybe looking at next school year. But I mean, I I think that for just like any other vaccine, this is going to be a crucial way for keeping kids and their families safe.
Yeah. What about the federal government and its communication in all this?
It's, you know, it's important to have communication on any health crisis from all levels. So, you know, as one of the experts pointed out, the Trump administration was kind of left families up on their own to make decisions about how to stay safe. Biden administration has been, you know, saying they'll follow the science, but there's still been some communication issues around, you know, boosters and other issues, masks and things like that. So, you know, a lot of this communication has to come from the top, but it also has to come from local officials and, like I said, pediatricians, community leaders, church leaders. Everyone needs to be on the same page about how important this is.
Thanks, Melody. Melody Schreiber, contributor to Guardian US. Coming up next, attracting and retaining employees in this labor environment.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you. And to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. If you've quit your job the past couple of months, maybe for a better opportunity or concerns about COVID, you've joined a record number of Americans who've done so. But how can employers keep their people? Insight from Carl Gould, business advisor and founder of Seven Stage Advisors. Carl, what can be done?
This is probably the most complicated answer I've had to give in a long time, because there's a new element here. Not only are some people, you know, quitting their jobs because either they don't like the vaccine mandates that might be put their way, or they are, you know, being asked to go back in person to the office and they don't want to do it. They want to stay hybrid or remote. But the new element, what a lot of people are not talking about, is people who have been working at home have been doing side hustles, and they're part of the gig economy now because they're home and they could do freelance projects. And so if I come back to the office, I have to give up all that side hustle money. Whereas if I can continue to work remotely and virtually, guess what? I can still keep my side gig going.
Interesting.
That's something new.
Yeah. So what about, let's start first. What about with retaining the folks that you have? What do you say if you're the manager?
Well, currently, you want to say a couple things. If you're the manager, you want to bring up in your regular meetings that it's indispensable to be in the office. And what I mean by that is, the longer someone does a remote job, all they're doing is auditioning to their boss that they can be replaced by a virtual outsourced employee. So if managers, I would float that at your next meeting and let them know, thank them for coming in to the office, thank them for being there, and that it's indispensable for building a culture to have people in the office. Because pre-pandemic, nobody was talking about send all of your employees home and that's the best way to build an efficient organization. Because if that was the case, they'd have been doing it, right? It was all about everybody in the office, open floor plan, take away the cubicles, collaboration. That's been known as the best way to build office culture.
We're speaking with Carl Gould, business advisor, also founder of Seven Stage Advisors. And we're talking about attracting and retaining employees in this environment, especially coming out of August, where 4.3 million workers quit their jobs. About finding new bodies in this particular environment when it seems it's so hard to do?
Well, now this will vary from business to business, but business owners out there, the first thing I would be looking at is, what are the tasks that happen on a screen and what are the tasks that happen that are recurring? And if any task that fits those two criterias, I would start looking for outsourced solutions, virtual employees, whether they be domestically or abroad, And I would broaden what my definition of the geography that you'd be willing to accept an employee from. So that's number one. The second thing I would do is I would look at automation. You know, is there any technology or automation that you can use in place of an employee? For example, if I own a restaurant, can I put an iPad at every table so I don't need somebody to come up and take the order? Is there a way that I can automate that? Because that will help you a little bit in your quest for employees. And then I would start off to attract employees. I would start offering trainings and certifications so people know that by coming to work for you, they're going to get a professional certification that makes them even more marketable. And so if I come to work for you, I'm not just going to training and getting a job and getting paid a wage. You're actually going to help me build my professional resume so I can grow in the organization or when the time comes, I'm more marketable for another position.
Thanks, Carl. Carl Gould, business advisor and founder of Seven Stage Advisors. Coming up next, airlines finally give flyers a reason to smile.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Hey, glad you're with us. Everything's tight in an airline cabin, right? But when there is adequate room, travel sure gets easier. Take overhead bins. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
One more frustration tied to flying these days, the size of the overstuffed overhead bins. But as Scott McCartney of the Wall Street Journal tells us, Boeing and Airbus have finally done something about them. Scott, what was the issue with the overhead bins?
Well, there basically wasn't enough room for all the passengers on the airplane. It was a false promise. Airlines were telling people to bring one bag for the overhead bin, one personal item for under the seat in front of you. And then they were cramming more seats into airplanes and also imposing baggage fees that led travelers to become pack mules and bring everything they possibly could into the cabin. So you ended up with, on many flights, a situation where a dozen bags or more would have to be checked at the gate because there just wasn't room in the overhead bins.
What did Boeing and Airbus do?
So Alaska Airlines really started this, went to Boeing, and Boeing had been thinking about different ways to create larger bins. And what they did was rearranged all the stuff going on in the ceiling of the airplane, moving some conduits and things, and creating more space so you could have a bin that was taller and also a bin that pivots up into the ceiling. And that allows you to turn bags, rollerboard bags, on their side. And what they created was a bin with that could handle 50% more bags. And with that, there was room for everybody's bag on the airplane. And that was a real game changer. Airbus has come up with something very similar. Boeing calls theirs the space bin, Airbus calls theirs the XL bin, and they have been really game changers for airlines, reducing delays, reducing stress at the gate, and making it a better travel experience.
Did the overhead bins that are larger take away headroom?
They did. So the Boeing space bin comes down 2 inches lower, so the air vent, the overhead light, that's 2 inches closer to your head. That may be an issue for some very tall people. For short people, it's actually a bit of a blessing that they can reach up there a little bit easier. And the bins do sort of pivot into the ceiling. So it's more pronounced on the window seat, a lot less pronounced because the bottom of the bin is curved and on the aisle seat.
We're speaking with Scott McCartney of the Wall Street Journal. Scott, were the changes difficult to make? You talked about how the whole ceiling had to change. Engineering-wise, was this difficult?
Yeah, I think this was. Anytime you change something on an airplane, space is at such a premium. Something's got to go somewhere else, and that can be really tricky and really complicated. So it wasn't an easy, obvious thing. It took a good deal of engineering. You can retrofit this into jets. We're just not seeing a whole lot of that. Clearly it's an expensive operation, obviously takes a lot of maintenance time to do it. But we are seeing, Boeing says about half of its 737s being delivered now have the space bin. It's interesting to me that it's not 100%, because the airlines that have it say they're winning customers with it, and people really like it, so why not? One reason is Southwest Airlines is not buying the space bin. And they offer free check baggage. They don't have the cabin baggage crunch that you find at other airlines. And I think they just don't want to encourage people to become pack rats on their flights.
That's Wall Street Journal travel columnist Scott McCartney with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. First impressions are a big deal, and after the last year of video meetings and remote working, you've got the chance to make a first impression all over again in your professional life. That's the beauty of Indochino. Indochino offers completely custom-fitted suits, shirts, casual wear, and more at surprisingly affordable prices. Every piece is made to your exact measurements, and you can customize every detail. I just ordered a pair of chino pants from their website, and the process was so easy. I was able to measure myself at home in minutes with help from their instructional videos. And everything from the hem to the back pockets are fully customizable. I'm floored that custom-made quality can be so affordable. You have to try it to believe it. Customize your new professional look, book an in-person appointment, or find a brand new Indochino location in a select Nordstrom near you at Indochino.com. Right now, you can get $50 off any purchase of $399 or more by using the code Gordon at checkout. That's $50 off a purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com. Indochino.com, promo code Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. I'm Gordon Deal. Coming up this half hour, should employee anger management training be mandatory? Also, how to best protect your investments if inflation continues to rise. Plus, bidets becoming a must-have bathroom fixture. And a horror movie expert offers scary recommendations by phone. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, while YouTube is full of videos of ordinary citizens behaving badly, the people acting out often have day jobs and don't seem to understand the personal risk they're taking. That's why tech analyst Rob Enderle is advocating for mandatory anger management training at work. Rob, your take.
I moderate a car forum, and also I am kind of hooked on Karen videos at the moment. But these are people that misact in public, most often in a racially inflammatory way. And it's really clear that across the forums, whether you're talking about car forums or any forum, people are behaving increasingly badly. And they're getting captured on YouTube, which in many cases, when it happens, costs them their jobs, if not their careers. And the bigger problem is this behavior clearly isn't isolated to the forums or external events. These people go to work, and as we've often seen, people that have bad behaviors in public also have bad behaviors at work, and may be abusive to their employees, their coworkers, or even act out against their superiors. And I think it comes down to the fact that people need anger management. In general, people seem to be a lot angrier at the moment and are unable to moderate or contain or control that anger. And it's resulting in some really nasty stuff and an awful lot of violence. And so and of course, there are rules here in the United States with regard to hostile workplace that speak to those kinds of threats. And if people aren't trained in anger management and reduce this, we're going to have a wave of hostile workplace actions that are going to do a substantial amount of damage to brand image, and not only during this time when we've got huge workplace shortages, where people just don't want to go to places that treat them badly, that kind of an issue is going to make getting people far more difficult.
Is there a policy that's needed from employers that says, perhaps more specifically or at all, that you represent your company, yeah, even when you're off-site and off-hours?
Yeah, and I use the example of both IBM and Disney as companies that have done this well in years past. Both firms did require employee training. I took both training programs when I worked for both of them. And the Disney was probably the most focused on being on stage and off stage. When you were in public, you were expected to behave a certain way, and if you didn't behave that way, that you could be terminated on the spot. IBM was much the same way with regard to being in public. If it came back to the company that you had behaved badly and it got connected to the brand, you could be reprimanded or terminated. And they made it very clear that there were no exceptions to these rules. You either behaved the way you were supposed to, or you were gone. And I think companies need to take policies like that so that people understand that the risks they're taking are dire. They will get fired if they take down the brand, but a lot of times they don't seem to realize that's the risk they're taking when they're taking it. And what you want to do is you want to stop the behavior, not just increase the punishment, because the punishment's an isolated instance, and then you take somebody that may have learned a lesson and you've now terminated them. You want them to learn the lesson before they exhibit the behavior and before they damage the company brand. You don't want to be seen, particularly in these days, as a company that employs racists or people that are politically insensitive pathologically problematic. So that, sorry, particularly not if they drift to violence, which is problematic in a whole different kind of category. So it is very important that the companies put in place a solid policy, communicate it regularly, and then put employees through anger management. And what anger management teaches you is one, to recognize that you're losing your temper, which can save you from a road rage incident that could put you in prison, or doing something. We just had a guy get in an argument just down the street from me the other day, and he pulled out a gun and he shot somebody. His life was over. And it just, because it escalated, he didn't control his anger, and it got out of hand. And a lot of states have relatively loose weapons laws at the moment. So these are the kinds of things you don't want to happen. You want people to understand that they're in distress, that they're losing their temper, and have mechanisms that they've been trained to use to de-escalate and back out of the situation, as opposed to allowing them to escalate into violence and creating a problem for themselves, their co-employees, and the people around them.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, founder of The Enderle Group. Coming up next, protecting investments from inflation. Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees, ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs, or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. The accelerating pace of inflation is one of the main economic trends of 2021. The Consumer Price Index, or CPI, the government's main inflation gauge, has ran around a 5% annual pace for the past several months. Higher rates of inflation have the potential to erode the value of investment portfolios. What can investors do? We're joined by Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic. Russ, set this up.
Inflation is up. It's been running about over 5% now for several months, year over year. That's up from 1.4% last year, and it's above the 50-year average of about 3.9%. So you have to decide, first of all, whether you see this as a significant threat. And it's still, I think, a divided house on that. But if you are a little worried about inflation, you can start looking at various investments to either provide some sort of protection or ride it out.
All right, so you did this breakout in the story talking about assets that might hedge against inflation. Like, which ones?
Well, I mean, there's some obvious ones like TIPS, which are Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. That's on the bond side. gold and other tangible assets, including real estate, have reputations for being pretty good real estate hedges. Curiously, though, I mean, I sat in on a panel discussion hosted by investment researcher Morningstar late last month, and the panelists kind of had some common ground in an asset that you wouldn't normally suspect or think of as an inflation hedge necessarily, and that is the stock market, stocks, mutual funds, et cetera. Specifically, companies make real goods and services, and they can often pass along those costs in an inflationary environment. And specifically, there are certain types of corporations that are particularly adept at as inflation hedges. Those would include natural resource, commodity, real estate companies, but even other ones that can, you know, as I say, pass along costs during inflationary environments. They should do fairly well.
Oil and energy stocks among them?
Absolutely. We're seeing gasoline prices not notch up, as you probably know. But other commodity prices too. Some of them have been doing well lately as well.
We're speaking with Russ Wiles, personal finance columnist at the Arizona Republic, part of the USA Today network. His piece is called "How Can You Best Protect Your Investments If Inflation Continues to Rise?" What about that if? Is this still transitional inflation that some are referring to it as?
There's been a lot of speculation that we could be starting to see lower inflation rates, you know, as early as maybe early next year. Obviously, we're in some interesting times right now, especially with the supply chain stuff that's going on, really, related to COVID, shutdown in semiconductors that have led to higher prices for automobiles, for example. There's a lot of constraints in the system. So, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, but I do think that a lot of really smart people out there in the investment world do see some of these price increases easing a bit by early next year.
Thanks, Russ. Russ Wiles, personal finance writer at the Arizona Republic. Coming up next, a bathroom fixture regains popularity thanks to toilet paper, or lack of it. Did you know most of the seafood on display at your grocer has been thawed out just to look fresh? Unless you cook it on the boat, peak freshness only happens when it's frozen right after it's caught. That's what they do at Wild Alaskan Company. Wild Alaskan Company delivers high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood right to your door. Premium cuts, ready to prepare, easy to cook. Choose from salmon, cod, halibut, and more, with different specials to explore every month. And they offer a 100% guarantee or your money back. I got the Wild Combo Box and couldn't be more impressed. Each piece of fish individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Very environmentally conscientious. Wild Alaskan Company's seafood is how nature intended it to be. Never farmed or modified, and no antibiotics. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's Wild Alaskan, A-L-A-S-K-A-N. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. Use that URL to let them know that we sent you. Hey, glad you're with us. During the early days of the pandemic, you'll no doubt recall when there were toilet paper shortages, bidet companies saw a notable uptick in demand, with several reporting tenfold increases in sales. Now, more than a year later, sales may be down from the peak, but demand is getting yet another boost with a new wave of toilet paper shortages. It's a story by Charles Passy, reporter at MarketWatch. Charles, what have you found?
You know, it really started at the beginning of the pandemic. We had that great toilet paper shortage of 2020, and that got people wondering, what are the alternatives? Well, a good alternative is a bidet, which is a bathroom fixture that is common in parts of Asia and Europe, has never caught on in this country, although there's been a more recent pre-pandemic push with a lot of new companies entering the market. And the pandemic and the toilet paper shortage that it begot seems to have become a tipping point. And recently, in the last few weeks, we're experiencing yet again another toilet paper shortage. Costco announced that it was going to be limiting purchases. So, you know, some of the bidet companies are saying, wow, we're getting a new uptick or whatever. But the business has been pretty steady since March 2020 for the bidet manufacturers. So and now they're getting a new uptick. And yeah, we seem to be entering a new way of going to the bathroom in this country, perhaps.
Well, it's gotten easier to get them too, right? You don't need this completely tricked out brand new fixture. You can get almost like an add-on bidet, for lack
right,
of a better
exactly.
term.
Exactly. I mean, the you know, I think a lot of Americans think of the bidet as this kind of second wash basin that goes next to your toilet. And that's the kind of the classic model. I've seen them certainly in Europe. And those are still available. But what you're seeing are bidets that are literally an add-on. So you can either, they either replace your toilet seat or they can even go on top of your toilet seat. They're also very affordable. I mean, there are bidet models under $100, these add-on ones. They can get a little more expensive. I mean, even the most expensive are about $500-$600 for, you know, something that has a heated seat. Again, this is something that would replace the toilet seat but doesn't replace the actual toilet. Of course, if money is no object, you can spend thousands of dollars for a much more tricked out bidet. You can either get a second wash basin, which would really probably mean, you know, redoing your bathroom, or the Japanese especially have models that are very popular there that are kind of a combination bidet toilet from the get-go, not an add-on. And those can be in the thousands of dollars. But yeah, there's a bidet for every style and every budget, I would say.
We're speaking with Charles Passy, reporter at MarketWatch. His story is called Bidets Are Quickly Becoming a Must-Have Bathroom Fixture. And yes, toilet paper shortages are playing a role. So how are bidet manufacturers and perhaps marketers taking advantage of this?
Well, they're certainly pushing them out there is what they're doing or whatever. I mean, what's interesting about the marketing of bidets, it's almost like they all had a meeting at the start of the pandemic and saying, boy, this is a tough sell. What can we do? Because, you know, you're talking about a bathroom product. It's not easy to talk about. There's a lot of humor that's going on in the advertising and also, frankly, a lot of frankness about the advertising. They're not hiding what a bidet is about. It's about cleaning your rear. And they're having a lot of fun with it. And I think they're kind of destigmatizing both the bidet and the process of going to the bathroom at the same time. There's a company called Omigo, which has some hilarious videos that they're using to promote it. One with a Crocodile Dundee style character. He talks about cleaning your down unders, sort of a play on the Aussie kind of vernacular. And yeah, they're having a lot of fun with it. One of the prominent companies, its name is Tushy. The actual name of the company is Tushy. So again, I think there's a lot that's going on in kind of making this product seem, you know, accessible, fun. I mean, yes, a bidet could be fun, I guess. And I think probably also very key to this contemporary too.
Thanks, Charles. Charles Passy, reporter with MarketWatch. Coming up next, where to get a scary movie recommendation by phone.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like you're going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. But to cruise through challenges, you need someone who's right there with you. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice you need to get past whatever's in front of you and get where you want to go. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Well, here's a different take on customer engagement. Shudder, a streaming service that specializes in horror, has a head of programming that hops on the phone every Friday afternoon in October to offer people custom movie recommendations. The Wall Street Journal says Shudder is using this kind of human touch to bond with subscribers and carve out some space in an entertainment market overshadowed by mega streamers like Amazon Prime Video and Netflix. Samuel Zimmerman, head of programming at Shudder, answers the phone with, "Hey, this is the Shudder Halloween hotline. Who's calling?" Mr. Zimmerman serves as a one-man call center in his bedroom in New York City. Using the Google Voice app, he powered through 15 movie consultations in the hour that was allotted last week. He recently suggested an Australian flick about a killer boar, Razorback, for a caller seeking an underrated relic. He pointed a woman in need of a respite from her new HR job to one called Motel Hell. among originals that Shudder has produced, a film called Host, about a seance on a Zoom call. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.